buckled up. Here we go. Here we go. This is Felger and Mass.
Yeah, Rex Ryan here.
I hate guests.
Yep, 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 yep.
There's no reason to touch them.
Keep it in your pants.
Why would you do that? Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Good news is Maz has the day off. The bad news is Jim Murray's in his place. Or do flip that. Either way, big Jim Murray in the Maz chair. Hey, Murray.
Hey, how's Sally Pelly Lemon Tally?
She's fine. Why?
Well, you see, I'm like JD Martinez. I'm asking about your dog.
Oh, see, you've got to explain every joke to me. Yeah. You just can't do
it. Boy, you forget him quick. That was just from a few days ago.
That sounds like a Stewart thing. Like, what? I don't even get, what are you saying?
J.D. Martinez asked David Price about Astro. It made David Price very happy earlier this week. He asked about Astro. So I'm asking about your dog.
Okay, my dog's fine.
There's no reason why they should have signed Martinez. They didn't need him, Mike.
Marshall Hook in our update studios. We take opening thoughts and we go to the phones. Jimmy, despite my late arrival, I am logged in. I am ready to go, so you may release the hounds at 617-779-0985. Go ahead, Murray. You want to start?
Yeah. Just when I thought the return on Jimmy Garoppolo couldn't possibly get any worse, I see a tweet from Ben Volen of Boston Globe this morning that had me do the old Dave Portnoy, spit out my coffee, and I wasn't even drinking any. The tweet reads as follows. Big news, the coin flip to determine the 9th and 10th draft picks between the Raiders and 49ers will take place next Friday at the Combine. It affects the Patriots, since they have the 49ers' second rounder. If Oakland wins the toss, the Patriots will pick 41st. If San Francisco wins, the Patriots pick 43rd. Two things here. If the Niners win this pick, and considering how everything has gone for this team since Super Bowl 52, I'm sure that they will, this further proves how negligent, stupid, and borderline criminal this return for Jimmy Garoppolo is. I'll never get over this, much like I'll never get over Super Bowl 52. And unless that pick becomes the second coming of Tom Brady or Willie McGinnis, which it won't, Bill blew it. And two, more from a league standpoint, like I had to read it twice. A coin flip. The NFL made $17 billion last year in a down year for the league. And you're going to help determine a team's future at the draft with a coin flip.
How should they do it?
Oh, I don't know. Why not apply common sense in these increasingly stupid times that we live in? Maybe look at the point differential of common opponents. I don't know. Strength of schedule. We've done common sense in these increasingly dumb times. A coin flip. You know what? How about let's just Rochambeau for it instead? Let's get Kyle Shanahan and Bill in a room, and we'll play rock, paper, scissors instead. $17 billion. And it's going to be determined by an effing coin flip? You've got to be kidding me.
But your first point is whether they win or lose it, it still drives home.
It's still ridiculous.
You're in the 40s.
For a kid who, while I still have questions about, you know how horny these GMs and teams are that are looking for the great white whale, the next quarterback. And he's kind of looked it so far. And you got a second rounder for him? A second rounder. Oh, he blew that so badly.
Hook, your opening thought.
You know who I love?
Who do you love?
I love Red Sox beat writers. They're the best. I love those guys. I mean, they stick to their convictions. You know, they really ask the tough questions of the Boston Red Sox, and when they get an answer that's weak, they dig right back in and demand more. And even when they're not asking questions, you know, they'll tell you like it is. So, like last week when the Red Sox didn't have J.D. Martinez, and they still don't, kind of, but last week we were fed the line from the beat writers that, boy, look at the Red Sox, man. They did it right. They paid attention to the market, and they realized that this was not the year to buy anything, and holding pat was the right way to go. Well done. All of you people out there who are saying they should have signed, you don't know what you're talking about. You're not here every day. They did the right thing. A couple days later, we've got J.D. Martinez. Boy, look at those Red Sox, man. They did the right thing. They waited, and then they got their guy because you know that they needed a power hitter, and they waited, and they got the right guy. They knew what they were doing all along. And then on top of that, the cherry on top of that Sunday is now we're being told they're right back equal with the Yankees, right? They're right back in there. You know, they were kind of out of it. The Astros, the Cubs, the Yankees were out doing stuff. But now, boy, they're right back in there because why? They got half the power hitter that Mike Stanton is, that Giancarlo Stanton is. They got a guy who kind of pales in comparison to the guy that the Yankees got. The Yankees, who were better than you to begin with, and don't give me, you know, that they won the division, the Red Sox. The Yankees were still playing while you were making tee times. So they're the better team. That's all there is to it. they got even better than you in the offseason, and you're feeding me this line that they're all equal now. And on top of it, you've got the highest payroll in all of baseball. You've signed this guy up who's going to hit 20 with 80 RBI for you going forward. You signed him up for multiple years. If he's good, he walks away. If he's bad, you're stuck with him. Either way, you have them next year. When the good people hit the market, the Yankees are going to go get Manny Machado, and you're going to look over to J.D. Martinez and realize he's one of nine DHs you have, and there's nothing you can do about it. So, yay to the beat writer.
Excellent hook. Down on the Red Sox. That's on the board. 617-779-0985. Mine is just quick on it, and it's on the Celtics. They start their second half tonight. It's not second half. It's their post-All-Star break schedule after tonight. And I think it's time to reset on the Celtics. It's time for the Celtics to reestablish what they are in the natural order of things right here in Boston. And that is, the Celtics are the biggest story in town next to the Patriots. The Celtics are the number two team in town next to the Patriots. The Celtics are... And this was, you know, all if we just dialed this back a month ago, this is where the Celtics were. Number two team in town, a true finals contender, and really not just a driving story locally, but nationally. And I feel like sort of the Bruins have kind of taken over in the last couple of weeks.
The buzz has definitely flipped in the last few weeks.
So the buzz has flipped to the Bruins, which it's not their time. It's the Celtics' time. The Celtics are ahead of them. The Celtics are closer. You're looking at each other like there's something going on.
Me?
Yeah.
No, I just need someone to sign me into this computer because I no longer work here.
I was wondering if there was breaking news. I needed to stop talking. But if there is breaking news, you'll know just to hit the button there. But, you know, it feels like the Bruins have sort of flipped that a little bit on the buzz thing. And with the Celtics, I don't know, finish going into the All-Star break, if people started to overlook them or just nationally, it's Cleveland now in a cakewalk, according to Stephen A. Smith. And I don't know. The Celtics are back at it tonight in Detroit, beginning the post-All-Star break schedule, 23 games into the break. I think it's time for them to reestablish themselves and the natural order of things to get back to what it is, which is Celtics being a big driving story in town, them being the number two team in town, them going on a run here. It's going to take them to the finals against the Golden State Warriors. And I just feel like it's time for them to reestablish that. So that's simply that. That's a simple Celtics take. We also have fresh Devin McCourty material as it relates to Malcolm Butler. But as we do here on Agenda Free Friday, we get to the phones immediately. Frank the Tank will give us a Bruins thought to lead off. Go ahead, Frank.
All right, boys. Here's my thoughts. If the Bruins want to get McDonough, which I wouldn't be the first one in line to go do that. I'd rather see them go get that guy from Chicago that Mike from Rubin was talking about. But if they're going to get McDonough, you're going to have to get rid of Torrey Krug if you plan on keeping McDonough for the long term. And I feel that they're going to have to get rid of a right shot defenseman. I'm hoping that it is not Carlo. I would look at more McQuaid or Miller.
Right. So, Frank, if getting Ryan McDonough meant that you lose Krug and Kevin Miller, you wouldn't do that?
I would do that in a heartbeat.
Heartbeat.
But what I'm saying is this. They need a right wing for Krejci. They desperately need a guy on that wing who can score if they're going to go far in the playoffs.
You thumbs up or thumbs down, Frank, on Nash? You thumbs up or thumbs down on Nash?
I am thumbs down on Nash. I think he's a great hockey player, but I don't see him fitting in this system at all. I don't see him with the kind of speed that this team has, and I just kind of think he's a dink. And I just don't see him fitting inside the chemistry of this team, so... They really, really need to look at not just this year, but the year after, because that money that Torrey Krug has, you're going to have to give that to McAvoy and McDonough if you're going to want to keep them both.
No question McDonough's a money concern down the road. Rick Nash is a pure rental. Formerly an elite power forward, like a true old-school power forward. $7 million a year, you know, at certain points of his career has been considered a top 3-5 player in the league. And he scares the crap out of me. Rick Nash, who, I don't know. I feel like you hear more about Rick Nash dogging it and underachieving than I do him living up to what he is.
There's really never anything positive written about the guy in the last few years, I feel like.
Well, no, I mean, he had a great year. Was it 2 years ago? I think he had a fabulous year. But I don't know. If I just, in my mind's eye, between Columbus and the Rangers, and I think about all the times I've heard about Rick Nash, I feel like I've heard more about him dogging it and not living up to his contract and his status than I am him coming through as an elite power forward in the league. He scares me. Even on a rental basis. I don't know why. When these guys, I mean Neely and Sweeney, talk about the chemistry of the team and how that's important. You don't want to mess with the DNA of the team. I feel like Nash is someone who could do that. I don't know. He becomes your highest paid player. Like, he walks in as your highest paid player. Superstar. And again, he's been a dog sort of for half of it. I don't know. That
when I think of grizzled,
he concerns me.
When I think of grizzled veterans that these guys have brought in, I immediately think of Stepniak and Ronaldo. And I'm no thanks. You know, on guys that have just been around the league a little bit too long, and I don't want them messing up the chemistry of this team right now with someone like that.
See, I don't look at that, because I think there's other guys who've been around a long time who would fit well. There's just something about Nash, it just feels like
his
that's
makeup.
Too big of a name, makeup, right. Too big of a name, too big of a reputation, too big of a thing. I don't know. I don't know what it is about Nash. I got reservations about Nash, mostly because he's dogged it half his career. I mean, that's, you know, simply put. All right, we're off and running on Agenda Free Friday. We get back to your phones right after this.
This is Felger and Mazz on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Do you want to talk about Malcolm Butler not playing or no?
I don't. I'll talk about anything.
Okay, so Malcolm Butler.
Yeah.
What the heck?
It was tough. You know, I think the whole week we knew the game plan was he wasn't going to start. You know, but once he didn't get in, I thought, you know, obviously it could have helped us, you know, and I thought personally that was tough for him, you know, to sit there. Obviously he played, I think, over 95% of the defensive snaps, and to not play at all in the biggest game, you know, I think is tough personally for any individual, whether it was injury, whether it's coach's decision. Anytime you can't get in there, you want to be in there and help. So I know that was tough on Malcolm, but I got a chance to talk to him after the game and you know, just tell him what he's meant to me as a teammate and as a friend. And whatever he chooses to do in the future, I think he knows. He has everybody in that locker room support. We know, you know, what he's been. And you know, I thought the worst part of everything was all the rumors that came out.
Right.
That were, I don't know where they came from, but no, like I've never heard, you know, the whole week that he was late or anything.
Partying,
so
yeah, well,
I hate it for him as far as his character to see that come up and it to be false. And now there will be a ton of people who just believe it because he came up.
Right.
McCourty followed up, I guess, this morning or yesterday on Sirius Radio. We don't have the sound, but I can read you the quotes. And reading from Michael Hurley, our former colleague, who writes for CBSBostonSports.com. It was on Friday. On Friday, appearing on Sirius XM's NFL Radio, McCourty clarified his comments, which, again, he didn't really need to clarify. He said, quote, "We never really knew that Butler would sit out the whole game." He says, "We never really knew. The starting part we knew, but him not playing? As Bill said, it was a coaching decision." Hurley writes that ever the diplomat, McCourty didn't answer directly when asked if the Patriots' defense was weakened by not having Butler on the field. Quote, "A lot hurt us. We didn't stop anything defensively. We can go down the list of Hall of Famers we could have used." End quote, said McCourty. Hurley writes, "While the Butler saga has certainly received considerable airtime over the past 3 weeks, it is with reason. With nearly two decades of Bill Belichick decisions to choose from, the concept to not use Butler at all ranks as the number one most bizarre. And for Belichick to refuse to insert Butler into the game, even as Nick Foles was in the process of throwing for 373 yards and three touchdowns, it is a decision that also stands out as one of the worst." It was McCourty, after all, who found himself isolated in man coverage on Zach Ertz for what proved to be the game-winning touchdown for the Eagles. Hurley writes that while that play, that was a play McCourty simply did not make, it was indicative of how the absence of Butler forced New England's defense and the players on the defense to serve roles that they hadn't served all year. Patrick Chung did not get to play to his strengths, essentially serving the role of a third corner. Jordan Richards tried and failed to play the Patrick Chung role. Johnson Badamosi got a crack at filling Rowe's normal role as a slot corner and likewise failed. As you might expect, the exclusion of a player who took nearly every single snap from the beginning of September through the end of January in Butler sent a ripple effect through the defense, and it made the unit worse. So, again, just the takeaway there is that McCourty says they knew he wouldn't start, but didn't know the part about not playing, which seems pretty obvious that in practice that week, Butler was repping with the backups or in the slot. Rowe was on the outside, and so anyone who was at practice could just look out and see that Butler was not a starting outside corner. Okay, so they knew he wasn't going to start, the whole not playing at all, that was what they didn't know, and maybe no one knew until Belichick decided it right before the game.
And I'm glad that McCourty clarified this, because when I heard it, I was disappointed, because I like him, like, as a player, and I, you know, based on how he comes off and what you hear about him, I feel like he's a nice guy and a good guy, someone that's easy to root for. So when I heard this, the first comments, I was like, oh, man, you're just towing the company line. You're doing Bill's bidding. Like, there's really no explaining this away. Oh, we knew he wasn't playing. Okay, we knew he wasn't going to start. That I can buy. But that he didn't play. I mean, there's no excuse for it.
See, I don't think that first comment was towing the company line.
Oh, you didn't?
No, not at all. I think anyone that comes out and strongly supports Butler, as McCourty did, as Brady did, is taking his side over Belichick. Oh, I mean, don't you?
Yeah, but as I first heard it, that sound that we played from about a week ago, I took that as, oh, no. We knew he wasn't playing at all. Like, let's not make a big thing out of this like the rest of you are. No, it's a big thing. Yeah, all right, fine. We accept that he wasn't going to start. And even I can accept that for whatever the transgression was. But when it really started getting ugly, the beginning of the third quarter, put him in, Bill. Swallow your pride and put him in. Put him in. Whatever happened, get over it. You know he's not going to be back with the team next year. Put him in the game. And he didn't. And there's still no explaining that away.
Okay, so that happened this morning. Here's Stephen Bridgewater, though, on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Steve.
So Hanley Ramirez this year is on a vesting option. So that means the Sox shouldn't play him at the start of this year, because going into the end of the season, what happens if we're up against a wild card to get pushed out, or maybe even beat the Yankees? So I'm saying that we shouldn't expect to see a lot of Hanley Ramirez this year, which is why we kept JBJ and Mitch Moreland, because we need someone to fill that DH slot. Well, Hanley is going to be benched because we don't want him next year.
All right, let's discuss this. And Hook, I want you involved because I know what the Red Sox mean to you. It's a love-hate. It's a classic example of the love-hate thing that I so appreciate with Red Sox fans. Hanley Ramirez needs what?
I think like 492 or something like that.
I was going to say 500 plate appearances to be guaranteed one more year at $22 million. Okay? Do you want him to get those plate appearances?
No, absolutely not.
Because on the face of it, that's what I would say. I can't stand looking at the guy half the time. I mean, he's one of the worst dogs in sports. One of the worst, his body language is horrible. I think he's a dog.
And he's a wildly overrated offensive player. I think people, I heard somebody earlier this week say, he'll get back to 3,100 this year. He's done 3,100, what, once in his entire career? Maybe twice? I mean, he's not that player. He is not this powerful corner kind of player that people seem to think he is.
Okay.
He isn't.
So on the face of it, I want nothing to do with the guy.
Yeah, but after the dip last year and what felt like 2016 was a fluke, I'm done. I can't believe that he's even here.
Okay. However, aren't they at their best if he's in the middle of the lineup behind JD Martinez hitting 30 home runs?
Yeah, except he doesn't do that. Yes, if you got the Hanley Ramirez from 2 years ago, if you got that guy all year long, because that was even, you know, that year came with waves of ineptitude in the middle of doing pretty well, then yeah, sure, great, wonderful, go for it. You're a big market team. If the cost of getting a real, truly productive year out of him this year is you have to pay for him next year, that's what rich teams are supposed to be able to do. So yeah, if he's performing, sure, put him in there, let next year be damned. But I don't think he's going to do that. And absent that, they definitely should not be giving him the at-bat.
I think the caller's 100% right, too. Like, hanging on to Mitch Moreland, and now that you have J.D. Martinez, okay, so to me, it looks like it's going to be a split at first with Hanley and Moreland. It almost guarantees that he's not going to get those plate appearances.
All right, I just worry about, and then him going from bad to worse then. You know, you're not going to give him the plate appearances. He's not going to get his money. He's going to shut it down. He's going to be the dog. He's going to be a pain in the ass.
Oh, he can join Panda then. He can just go right to Pablo and what's his name, and he can just go off into the sunset together and collect their money from John Henry.
I'll tell you what, though. I didn't realize he's been 3,100 only once in his life. That's unbelievable.
He's a dog.
And that was 2 years ago for you.
Yes, this is what I'm saying. The notion that people have, they don't actually look
production. He's never been a 3,100 guy. That's insane.
People think he is. They're oh, well, he'll get back to 3,100. Well, if he gets back there, it'll be a visit to a place he's never been before or been once.
Well, because when he's hot and he's actually trying, he's their best hitter. He's their best
hitter. He's a 3,100 guy for about 2 weeks at a time sometimes.
Wow. Brian on Cape Cod, what do you got for us on an Agenda Free Friday?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I was just watching the Cavaliers last night play at home against Washington. And at the end of the game, everybody's standing around. And I think LeBron got the last 15 points or something, and it just dawned on me, it takes them about a couple of weeks to ruin a perfectly good team. It's like you get a new girlfriend, she's a 10, oh, this is great. She's gorgeous. I get this girlfriend. And then you realize we're going to go out and she's in the bathroom for 3 hours. That's what he does to a team. It's like they're all standing around now because they're afraid to do something because he's got to be the guy.
You're standing around waiting for her to get out of the bathroom to finish doing her hair.
Come on. So I watched a good chunk of this last night.
Me too.
And defensively, especially in that second half, like the Cavs kind of looked like they shut it down, or at least the Wizards were attacking them. They're attacking that defensive scheme, and they couldn't hit their free throws for most of the night. It looked like they had trouble hitting beyond the arc. Like it didn't look all that good for them coming out of the All-Star break.
This is what I'm saying about Cleveland. Let's see what happens when they lose a few.
Yeah.
And LeBron starts looking at his guys sideways, you know, and it's all winning's a great deodorant, as Chris Gasper always says. So it looked pretty good after that trade, and they were winning, and everyone was happy, and they're clowning around on the sidelines and all, you know, unicorns and show ponies. What happens when they lose a few and LeBron starts doubting who he's playing with? That's when it starts, man. And so let's see with Cleveland. They came out at home against a Bullets team that still doesn't have John Wall.
Right.
And they lost going away.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger. I like Antetokounmpo.
And Mass.
Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
You know, we're going to continue to look at the marketplace and see where guys may fit in, who's available, and continue the calls that happen a lot more frequently this time of the year and see where it goes. Our club has played well, but as I said, we got a long way to go, and we got a tough March in front of us, but we got February that we got to deal with, and we're only concerned about tonight's game and where we go, but I'll continue to gauge the marketplace. It's expensive, I can tell you that.
They deactivated Rick Nash, Michael Grabner, and Ryan McDonough. And so Grabner goes. They trade Grabner last night to New Jersey for a second-round pick and a marginal prospect. Does that feel that expensive? A second-round pick, and again, the prospect they gave up is a defenseman, a 20-year-old defenseman who's in the KHL. He's in Russia. Who, I think I read this, was not drafted at all in his first draft year, and then was, in his second eligible draft year, was drafted like in the fifth round. So, like, he wasn't even drafted when he turned 18, when he was eligible to be drafted. And then it was his 19 draft year that he got drafted, only in the fifth round. So,
well, tell me a little bit about Grabner. I don't know enough about him.
Well, what I'm telling you is the prospect's nothing. The prospect feels like nothing. So it's a second-round pick for Michael Grabner, who's a legit NHL winger who I think he's got like 25 goals and 6 assists, which is a weird stat line.
So it would have been an upgrade over Spooner.
Oh, big time. Big time.
So that doesn't sound like a big ask to me. So what's your comp here?
Right. Is a second-round pick that expensive for Michael Grabner? Doesn't feel like it is.
How do you feel about Derek Brassard?
Okay. He's a center. I don't know if they need him. Why?
He's been traded to Pittsburgh.
For what?
For a first, goalie Gustafson, and other cap-related elements.
A first? Yeah. So he goes for a first. That's expensive.
Yeah, that's high.
That's expensive.
This Grabner one sounds, you know, I'm trying
sounds,
to think
sounds
quick.
Reasonable.
Yeah, like
sounds reasonable. You know, a second round pick. So, you know, the Bruins obviously and Rangers have been talking. There's players that they like, and you know that they've been through their system. So it the fact that the Bruins weren't in on Grabner tells you they're in on someone else, or they're just, you know, that's it. You know, they traded for the holding kid on defense, and that's it. So we'll see. But I don't think the Grabner price was that expensive. I really don't. For a first for Brassard, now that's pricey. Nash is going to be at least a first. That's another reason I don't want Rick Nash.
Good there,
I don't know
no.
if I want to give up a first for Rick Nash. I don't. I give up a first for Ryan McDonough, who you have for more than 1 year. But watch to see what's going on with the Rangers. They've shut all those guys down because they'll all be gone, it figures, before Monday. Here's Pat in Boston. He wants to follow up on that. Go ahead, Pat. Hello, Pat. Okay, babe, you can call us back. Pete in Delaware with a thought. Hi, Pete.
Hey, guys, I called to make Murray's day a little brighter. So I was reading an article in USA Today, it was a couple days ago, going over draft value. Well, Patriots are ranked 29th, and the 49ers are ranked second. You know, they go by how many picks you have and where you're picking. So the 49ers have 9 picks in this year's draft. The day that Belichick made the trade, they had their first pick, 2 2s, 2 3s, a 4th, a 5th, and so on. But the point being, they had all those picks, and all we got was a second. Murray, have a great day.
It's just not the Niners one. Isn't that the one that I second guess necessarily?
Yeah, that doesn't that part. That's fine. It's that he didn't call anybody else that would have given you more.
He didn't pick up the phone. Never mind calling around.
Right, just texted.
The guy in Cleveland kept trying to get a hold of him, or kept trying to make an offer, and Bill wouldn't even accept it. Bill wouldn't even accept an offer. He wasn't. The window was shut on Cleveland. That's the one. Cleveland. And Cleveland was willing to offer you their second first. They have two first-round picks. They have their own, and they had one from Houston. And they were willing to offer the Houston first-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo. And Bill wouldn't even listen to him. That pick right now is fourth overall.
It's negligent is what it is.
That's it. That's the one. That's the one you should be pissed about. All he had to do was listen to, but why? Why? He wanted to take care of Garoppolo because he likes the kid? He wanted to take care of the Shanahans because he likes them? Like, I mean, what? Why? Well, why would you? And don't give me you're afraid of Garoppolo coming back to haunt you as a Cleveland. Cleveland would ruin Jimmy Garoppolo like they'd ruin everybody. You know, you hear that. Like, well, you can't send him there. You can't send him to the Jets. What? If a great quarterback fell in the Jets' lap, don't you think they'd screw him up?
Yeah, more likely than not.
I mean, but the Jets, fine, in the division, you don't want to do that, you don't want to do that. Cleveland? All of a sudden, you're scared of Cleveland. Please, I don't want to hear that. He wasn't scared of Cleveland. He wanted to take care of the kid because he liked him. Phil in Malden. Go ahead, Phil. What do you got?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Just watching, I know it was only college baseball yesterday with the Red Sox, but this manager reminds me so much of Bobby Valentine.
Don't you think that's a little early, Phil?
I hope we don't get back to the chicken and beer days.
What did he do? What did he do that reminds you of Bobby Valentine on day one?
Just laughing and joking and this and that, you know. But the other thing is, here's my prediction. The Red Sox are going to finish third behind the Yankees and Baltimore.
Okay, well, let's see it. I don't know. But does Baltimore have any pitching to speak of? Any?
No, not that I know.
Okay, so...
And that's been their Achilles heel the last few years.
Look, I have big concerns about Cora. First-year manager, man. First-year manager, first-time manager with this team in this market, with these expectations, that's a ton to ask.
And coming in here immediately talking about fun, we're going to have more fun this, fun that. Like, right. That's a red flag.
And he's sort of brought here, right, to be this, you know, sunshine day next to Farrell, who they all hated. So, I don't know, it just all feels like a recipe for disaster. It just, yeah, I have big concerns. My only solace is that the Yankees did one even worse.
Right.
The Yankees went even worse and signed a guy who not only has never managed, never even done anything but broadcast.
Yeah, to Cora's credit, he's at least coming from a World Series champion, Houston Astros.
He sat on the bench for a year, you know, and
Booney.
Watched.
Aaron Boone, please.
I mean, he
hit a home run in 2003.
Believe me, I know.
Both those moves, just, they absolutely stunned me. Martin on the Cape with the Celtics thought here on Agenda Free Friday. Hi, Martin.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Here's my theory on Marcus Smart's cut hand. It was never a picture or a painting that Marcus Smart cut his hand on. He walked into his hotel room bathroom and saw his face in the mirror. He was ticked off at himself and had the same reaction as me when I have to look at his stupid mug after a moronic game-watching play. He punched his doofus reflection. I can't wait to see his shot now.
What? Can you imagine? That's right. Before the 24 stitches.
Yeah, maybe it's fixed it in some weird twist.
He's got a lot to prove, man. He's got a lot at stake. If he's, you know, in some ways fighting for his future as a Celtic or his future in the league, he's going to be a restricted free agent after this year. Big questions about his game to begin with and his worth to begin with here or elsewhere. And then he goes and does something like that. So I think there's a lot. He's got a lot riding on these last 23 games and into the playoffs.
Without question, obviously, personally, financially, you know, this is something that he needs to rectify. But to his teammates and the coach, I mean, he let these guys down those last 11 games before the All-Star break. He screwed them.
Chasen in Bellingham on the Malcolm Butler story. Hi, Chasen.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Excellent.
Big fan of the show. Two quick things I want to run by you on the Patriots is, it's obvious Butler's going to be out, you know, out the door. What about putting the transition tag on him and at least trying to get, you know, a pick for him? And then the other thought I had was, is why not have, you know, go after Jimmy Graham and let go of Bennett and Allen, you know, and try.
Okay, so let me just stop you. You don't get any compensation on a transition tag. All you get is the right to match. So it's sort of useless. I mean,
even if they did,
they don't want to match.
They just made him, or at least Bill did, they made him persona non grata in Super Bowl 52. They were getting nothing in return.
What?
They know that you don't value him.
Okay, right. So this Butler's gone, and that's it. All right. The thing about Jimmy Graham, would you buy on Jimmy Graham?
Maybe, but now that Martellus Bennett, this news today that he wants to be back, I think if you cut Dwayne Allen, I'm just trying to do the quick math, I think you cut Dwayne Allen, you'll save $5 million. In theory, you'd be able to give Bennett the money that he's looking for.
I want nothing to do with Marty Bennett.
Really?
Oh, the guy's a fraud. The guy's a total...
As long as he's healthy, though,
he can help this team. The guy's a total dog.
Green Bay whiner.
Well, what he did to Green Bay, he could do to you.
You know, except I mean, he did it to Green Bay to come here.
Right, so. Exactly. But don't, I mean, a guy who's capable of doing that or who acts with that kind of character or lack thereof is just always right around the corner from doing the exact same thing to you. So I want nothing to do with the guy.
I don't know. In his time here, though, he was the consummate professional because he is one of these a-hole guys, Mike.
Overrated.
But also, if he's healthy, he's good insurance for Gronk if he doesn't come back
and,
or
and think
Gronk
about
gets
this.
Banged
people
up.
Were excited about Dwayne Allen. People were excited about what's his name from Buffalo. There's been a long line of this next tight end is going to be the, you know, the next Aaron Hernandez, the good Aaron Hernandez, the football player Aaron Hernandez, you know, that other bookend to Gronk, and none of them have done it. Bennett's the only one who's come close.
Yeah, the whole Gronkowski thing is interesting, man. If he's going to leverage the team with the wrestling stuff and the movie stuff and really threaten to retire, if he retires, you lose him for nothing. If you're the Patriots, are you proactive? And what if someone offers you a first-round pick for Rob Gronkowski?
Ooh, wow, I hadn't thought about that.
Okay, well, maybe we pick this up on the other side. Long commercial-free segment is next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-hee-hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gut feeling, real quick.
Yep.
Percentage, you believe that Rob Gronkowski is coming back.
Oh, I think it's 50-50 right now.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's up in the air. I think this is something he's legitimately thought about. We've seen the way that he's handled his money, and we've seen clues over the last few years in the way that his health has been handled. It's different than the way any other Patriot's health has been handled. As far as the flow of information, you know, where he's getting surgery, all those sorts of things. So clearly it's something that's been on his mind for a long, long time. And like Tommy Curran said, I think it's something the Patriots have to take very, very seriously.
If Gronkowski really holds a line on the Patriots and says, no, no, unless you give me another big bump up in pay, I'm going to retire. I'm going to go to the WWE. I'm going to do action movies. I'm going to do Nickelodeon, whatever. I'm out. And I have something else. I have the leverage. So pay me or I'm out. And let's say, let's just say, and this plays out and the Patriots say, no, we're not going to give you what you want. But there's someone else in the league who will. There's someone else in the league who will give Gronkowski what he wants on a contract. And he's willing to give, and that team's willing to give the Patriots a high draft pick. High second, low first round pick. Would you do it if you're the Patriots?
Well, yeah, if he's that convincing and that he's going to go to the WWE and you can get some kind of a return, yes. Yeah.
See, I wouldn't. They can't. This is the whole thing. We were talking about this yesterday. They're all in on Brady. Once you push all your chips into the middle of the table on Brady, you've got to keep all his guys. You've got to keep and pay Brady himself. You've got to keep and pay Gronkowski. You've got to keep and pay McDaniels. This is the whole deal.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But if he's that, if Gronkowski's that,
I call his bluff. Or I pay him.
I was going to say, well, that's the option.
Well,
that's
yeah.
Option C is you actually pay him. You do whatever you go through the back and forth. No, we're not going to pay you. Fine, I'm going to go wrestle. And then at the end, if you're left with that choice, then you pay him.
Well, the way that you broke this down, you didn't give me that option. That's the option. I said it yesterday. He has them over a barrel, and rightfully so. They need to pay him, and not on an incentivized contract like it was this year. You have to roll the dice and trust that he's going to be healthy, and Brady has to be part of the sales pitch. We need you. I need you.
Look,
what do you want?
Look, there was a fork in the road there, folks. They could have let Brady go or even traded him and gotten draft picks for the future and gone with Garoppolo for the next 10 years. And in that case, if that's what you're doing, you're transitioning, then you can let Gronkowski go for draft picks and just, you know, get all this
build for the next
bevy of draft picks, and you build around Garoppolo for the next 10 years, and you'll be good for the next 10 years, and who knows if you'll ever be a champion. You certainly won't be a five-time champion. No matter what happens, you're not going to be as good. But, you know, there's your option. You keep Garoppolo, you build around Garoppolo, and you make these big decisions for the future. But you didn't. You went just the opposite. You traded the next 10 years of Garoppolo for the next 3 of Brady. So you've got to, now this whole cliche about maximizing Brady's window, now you have to. There's no other option. You made your bed. Keep McDaniels, keep Gronkowski, pay him, make him happy, etc., etc. You have to. You have to. So I think their hands are tied.
Yeah, and part of that is what I said yesterday, in that don't draft a quarterback with any of these picks. As of right now, you have 5, especially those top picks that you have. Please don't waste it on any of these quarterbacks. Kyle LaLetta. Oh, because, yeah, his dad played it. He was the quarterback while he was at Navy.
Just wait, that's coming.
Oh, he's a lacrosse player. Oh, God, that'll drive me crazy.
You know it's
maximize
coming.
Maximize the Brady window while you have it.
We continue with your phone calls here on an agenda-free Friday. Everything being on the table. Tender in Providence, longest order of wait. Go ahead, Tender.
Hey, guys. I disagree with, I think, all three of you on the panel today about Hanley Ramirez. I don't think we should be taking the bat out of his hand just because you're worried about a you know, a $22,000 option next year.
$22 million.
I mean million. I meant million. I'm old, so $22,000 is a lot of money. But anyways, the reason I'm saying this is, you don't want to take the bat out of his hand because he could help lead us to a World Series again.
So I agree with that, Turner. Let me just stop you there. Their ceiling, Marshall.
Yeah.
Their ceiling, the best they can be, includes Hanley Ramirez in the middle of their lineup. You understand that. If he's not 30-100, okay, what if he's 25-85?
Well, that'd be more impressive than he was last year. So,
which was what, 23?
24. 24. 23, yep. 19. 13, 20.
Now what
those
are you
doing? Are his home. I skipped over the 30. Those are all of his home run totals on either side of that 130-100, the one that he did.
So again, 2 years ago, he was 3,100, 30 home runs, 111 RBI. The two previous years, he was 1,371, 1,953.
Yeah.
And then last year, he's 2,362.
And he hit 240. And listen, I get it. Somebody sent me a tweet with some ridiculous statistic to tell me that's why Stanton is not as good as J.D. Martinez.
Oh, God.
I get it that average isn't a thing, but it is a thing. Right? It matters. It has something to do with how well you can actually put the bat on the ball, which seems to be a core part of hitting. And he doesn't do that nearly as well as people think that he does.
2016 was a fluke. What was the variable that year? It was Ortiz's swan song. Ortiz kept him in check. It's not going to happen again.
I'm just telling you. You're at your best when he's in the lineup every day hitting.
Yeah, I know. But that's this guy's career. Hanley Ramirez, .. in theory. You know,
what is his WRC plus?
Because, I don't even know what WRC plus
means. Somebody
means.
Told me that the WRC plus is the important thing I need to look at. And that is the weighted runs created plus. So until you can tell me what his WRC plus is, then I don't know that we can accurately judge what Hanley Ramirez is.
Weighted runs created plus.
If we had a longer show, I could give you the formula.
No, I'm good.
If you, sir, approved. Other than John in Foxborough, who we love, Boston Sports Inf, but if you are an individual who knows that stat, relies on that stat, and uses that stat, you, sir, should be taken out back and slapped across the face.
You're helping to ruin sports.
Anthony, no, you've ruined them. You've basically ruined them. Anthony and Medford on the Bees, go.
Hi, Mike. I just want to say, yesterday, Murray, that was an awesome answer, 5-star with Jesse Owens there. That was awesome.
Oh, yes. I'll pat myself on the back right now, Anthony. Thanks.
Second greatest U.S. win in the history of sports is what it was.
Yep. But, Mike, they have to be all in the Bruins this year. Mike, if there's any year they're primed to win, it's this year. Tampa Bay does have the best team there at first, but the second-place team is the Vegas Knights expansion team. They have to be on. They have to make that trade, I think, if they can get McDonough. I'd give up Pine, not to Bruss like you, because I think he might be the only one out of those three to make it out of the 13, 14, 15. What was it, Zobel and Zassi's in there?
Well, let me just stop here, because now you're giving me 14 different things as usual. Are they primed to win it? If it's not now, is it never? Is it that kind of thing? Is it that kind of year?
No, they're ahead of schedule.
Well, it's just the opposite. They should have a nice long run in front of them. They should have a nice period here of McAvoy, you know, I'll call it the McAvoy era, where they should be sniffing around the thing for the next decade. They should, don't you think?
Yeah, makes me a little nervous because the last time I said that, it all got blown up.
But let me tell you what. Let me tell you what it is. What this might be. The clock might be ticking. It is ticking on the Chara Bergeron.
Oh yeah,
prime. Like I don't think you will have another year like this where Bergeron and Chara together are playing at this level. Bergeron should be good for the next couple. Like he's not that old. He's 31 something. But Chara, I feel like Chara, like any moment, could just fall off a cliff and that's it for Chara. He's been really good this year. And, well, so that just between him and Bergeron together, and if you want to sort of add in...
Marchand, I think you can add in. He's not getting any younger.
He's mid-20s. He should be... No, I don't add him in. I consider... He's too young, Murray. If you want to say Bergeron, Chara, Krejci, like that sort of, maybe Backes, like that sort of... Those guys... How many more years can you count on those four guys being healthy and as productive as they are in the same season?
No, those guys at that age, you're catching lightning in a bottle. This is why I wanted them to make some kind of moves by the trade deadline, and they're doing that so far. But don't make anything drastic that's going to, you know, end up putting this team in some sort of financial Shirelian jail in a couple of years. This is why I'm a little nervous about Ryan McDonough.
But this may be the last kick at the can for Chara. I mean, it might be, and I think that's something worth considering.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.